I'm excited to introduce you to my new series of the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast. And in this series, we will be discussing the topic of high-performing teams. We will be joined by several guests from across the leadership effectiveness spectrum who will help us explore the core elements of what makes a team high-performing. We will be discussing the importance of diversity within a team, the role of purpose, the role of goals in order to drive clarity, how to hire the right talent to scale to the next level of organizational growth and team effectiveness, as well as the importance of investing in wellness solutions that will boost your team's psychological health as a strategic performance enhancing priority. Guy Day is the founder and director of Barton Rock, the executive search firm which he established in 2020. He dedicates his experience and skills as a CEO and business leader to help scale-ups and high-growth consumer and retail businesses acquire leaders that can drive companies to success within dynamic market environments. Before Barton Rock, Guy spent over 20 years in recruitment and search, including two stints as CEO of mid-sized firms. He's worked internationally, having been based himself in Asia for 20 years, and has managed senior executive search mandates within a range of functions for companies across Asia Pacific, Europe, Canada, and the US. I am delighted he's joined me today to bring his insights around hiring for growth and the importance of succession planning to create high-performing teams. Welcome, Guy. Welcome to the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast. It's great to have you join us again.
Thank you for inviting me along and looking forward to the conversation.
This series has been focused on high-performing teams. What makes a high-performing team? And as you know, from the work we've done together, it's quite a complex piece. And I'm really keen to get a bit of an external perspective because, of course, as an executive search partner to organizations, you're brought in to bring new fresh blood into teams. So I'm keen to just get under the skin of that a bit and hear your thoughts and get your wisdom on this topic. What is a high-performing team to you? What does that look like? What has it looked like?
So if I take an example of a client that I would typically engage with, so if I'm talking to a CEO and determining or assessing what high performance looks like in their team, I think the first thing I would be saying is, well, you know, are they pulling together to hit the company budget? So I suppose there's different ways that you can define high performance, but first and foremost, a high performing team is one which is hitting its revenue and profit goals. Now, that's quite a quantitative way of looking at things. It's almost an outcome, an end goal of bringing together a high performing team in the first place. So I think you'd look at high performance also in the context of, well, what are the credentials of the people that are reporting to the CEO? What sort of strength of background have they got? The credentials of the companies that they've worked for, are they recognized businesses? And I think the other thing is how they're all pulling together. I think the old adage of a CEO is only as effective as the people, the component parts, you know, reporting into her or him. So I think that's a really big part of it, having a complementary group of leaders that really pull together, that really collaborate. Mm-hmm. And this probably ties in with a lot of the work that you're doing for Newland Rock is making leadership teams more effective, bringing them together and being more effective working together. So high performance is a hard one. It's a difficult one to answer in just a couple of short sentences, but hopefully that gives you a bit of a flavor. And certainly as a CEO managing people myself in the past, of course, you've got to make people's jobs as measurable as you can. Even if they're not in sales functions, you've still got to have measurability. And I guess high performance is individuals that are hitting their quarterly or annual goals.
I really like the fact that you've brought in this
peace around the hard and the soft. So, you know, let's get real. Organizations need to achieve a certain outcome, as you say. There are revenues to be made, profit to be made, shareholders to have happy smiles, et cetera, et cetera. So we need teams to produce, deliver, achieve on the hard numbers that have been set out. I like the fact then that you're saying that that's the output. And then what I'm hearing is how a team gets that output in some respects defines them being high performing. So in my world, I've often seen, you know, you can have teams that make the hard stuff come to life. So the hard, not meaning that it's hard and so difficult, but hard as in the quantifiable financial results are there. But how they've got there can lead to a wave of destruction, disengagement, you know, people feeling like they just want to walk out the door. So, you know, I'm hearing from you bring this lens that in order to make that financial work, how the leadership team complements each other, how they work with each other, how they support their CEO is part of the ingredients. It's that combination.
Yeah, and I think there's also this whole piece around sustainability of results as well. So, you know, if you're a publicly listed company, there is an expectation that, you know, in the US it's quarter by quarter, but certainly year after year that you are delivering incremental revenue and profits. And speaking to your point about, you know, if you have a particular approach which is short term and you know, you burn lots of bridges, leave a trail of fire behind you, even though you've hit the results 1 year, how sustainable is that? And if the impact on the culture is such that you're creating something toxic where people just don't want to be part of it, you're having high turnover, and once you have high turnover, performance, sustainable performance becomes almost impossible.
Yeah, really important point. So let's go in the day in the life. Client gives you a shout and says, we need to engage you. We're looking to hire by XYZ. And, you know, for me, I'm kind of then triggered by a multitude of questions that would be on my mind as to, okay, what's going on? Why is this happening? But let me hear from you. And thinking from the perspective of a high performing team, company saying we need to hire this talent, this executive individual person role, how does that then weave into high performance and looking at the team construct and helping an organization figure that part out?
Yeah, I mean, I think my job coming into the business is to sort of diagnose what the problem is. So there's a whole host of different questions that I would ask to really try and get deep into the challenges that the business is facing. Obviously, the first question is, you know, why is this hire necessary? Is it underperformance of existing teams? Is it staff turnover? Is it a newly created position? But first and foremost, what I'm looking for is to get clarity, and I'm trying to crystallize what the CEO is looking for and make sure that there is absolute alignment around the executive committee or the board in some cases. But there's a whole multitude of questions that I'd be asking to try and put my finger on precisely what they need to identify from outside, and also one of the questions I'd be asking is, well, why haven't you got an internal option? Because, you know, succession, as I'm sure we'll talk about a bit more in this podcast, succession planning is one of the biggest failings of organizations that I encounter. And, you know, it's good in some respects because it means that executive search practitioners like myself are well utilized, but That is a big challenge for organizations.
Mm. I like this piece around the succession planning and how that then features into high performing teams, because when you look at, and if I am analyzing a team and I'm looking to see what their performance, how their performance is showing up, I'm always interested and need to know what's going on the layers below. I'm looking to see within this team that I'm analyzing, who's also ready to move out of this team, because we need to have new perspectives. We need to have freshness. Now, that move out doesn't necessarily mean you're not cutting it. It might actually mean that you just no longer fit this phase of what this leadership team are here to do. It could be that, you know, they're divesting. It could be we're re-strategizing and we're acquiring. You know, multitude of reasons as to why in a leadership team, individuals start to no longer fit. It's not always because they haven't produced the goods. They're just not the right person for what's happening next. And then from there, I want to look at the succession plan to see how forward thinking that business has been around where it is that they're going for their broader strategy, and have they been developing and priming the talent in the background to kind of take them on to the next phase?
And
that is challenging, isn't it? That is a very challenging, complex space, because a lot of the time these changes in direction from a strategy point of view are happening at such pace, we're not always able to have the robust succession plans that we may have had in the past or may want. Comes back to then the sort of executive search lens to bring in that fresh perspective. What's your view?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking exactly the same. The succession planning piece is a really complex area to get right, because the pace that an organization moves isn't always the same pace that the individual wants to move at in terms of their own career development. So you can't legislate for a certain amount of impatience on the part of the individual who, you know, may choose to leave before, you know, an opportunity arises. And that point you make about leadership being right for certain phases of growth, I completely agree. And I've seen with a lot of the scaling companies that I work for in the retail sector, there are individuals that will get you to a certain point. Let's take more entrepreneurial businesses that are in high growth. There is a stage to which those organizations get to where you need to inject a certain amount of structure and rigor, almost like a platform that gives you that ability to get to your next phase of growth. And that sometimes comes from individuals who have got more structured, larger company backgrounds. That doesn't mean they're not entrepreneurial, by the way, but individuals who have had that experience of growth and the obstacles that present themselves when you don't have a certain amount of or a certain framework in place, you get to a certain point and then your growth tends to level out if you haven't got the structure in place. So I completely agree with you and see that on quite a lot of occasions. So individuals that get you through the first 3 to 4 years, but when you want to go from years 5 to 10, which is another phase of growth, that's sometimes a different leader.
It's a different leader, and it's a different style and composite of a team. And as you were talking, I was thinking about that piece where, you know, the business has been going through growth, that team have been in the hot seat of driving that growth, and then the organization and the economy starts to change gear, and therefore the teams need to change gear. There's something about being aware of how agile and how okay a team are towards, you know, making that U-turn or you know, dive in a different direction. It doesn't always fit, does it? And it kind of requires a relook at who you have, how they serve, what they're bringing you, and then collectively, are we leveraging each other in the right way to get us there? And I'm curious, you know, from your experience of working with organizations who have, you know, sought your advice and retained you to work on particular programs, when you've faced a sort of phase of stagnation, you know, you can see that a team might be stuck or the strategy is stuck, but there's something just not working. But you're coming in to sort of, you know, create a little bit of change through bringing in some new talent. How have you gone about that? What tends to be the flow? Because I imagine it takes a bit of counsel. You're dealing with a lot of senior leaders who might need a little bit of a gentler nudge, as it were, to make these moves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky in the sense that I've been a CEO before. So I guess what I bring to the equation is probably a blend of executive search expertise, but I also have this business consultancy sort of mindset that I bring to the equation. I think the challenge is that a lot of companies start with a long list of requirements that they're looking for. And it's my job as an executive search expert in a particular field. And in this case, it's retail and consumer, how realistic those expectations are with the client. You know, we've really got to try and understand what's critical that they absolutely can't compromise on and what they don't already have on their executive bench, and what can be learned or what do they need to buy in, essentially. So my job is really to drill down into the expectations of the job to visualize the ideal candidate in place in that role. And then that in turn shapes my advice to the client in terms of what's available in the market and what they're likely to be able to access.
I think that point around what's available and what they are likely to be able to access is a really important part. So let's take this scenario of, we know that our leadership team have brought us to where we are now. That's great, but it's not going to take us to where we are going next. And therefore, we need to make some changes. And so we're going to go down a route of hiring in for that change to take place. And then it's the expectation at that point, because quite often as well, I think that organizations, they are internally focused, aren't they? They're focused on what they do, what they know, what their business is about. And then understanding and appreciating what is out there to be able to acquire in. And I think for me, that probably comes with a bit of consulting on how they position what this opportunity is. And I'm curious to know how much of your coming into this type of team shows up versus, you know, come and join us as a company.
Yeah, I think, well, it's a bit of both, of course, because you've got to get hook them on the company as well as the job. And I think it's also, you know, people work for particular leaders as well as particular companies, in the same way as they, you know, people don't just leave jobs, they leave people, you know, management teams and such like. So it is a bit of both, but I think the particular challenge is part of the story. And I think with an executive search mandate, part of the skill in attracting candidates is being able to storytell, for want of a better term. It really is about framing the particular challenge, and so much of it also comes down to cultural fit. Most of the clients I tend to work with are organizations that I know pretty intimately, and so I have a really good awareness of cultural fit. And, you know, back to what you do and some of the things that you've spoken about already today, that fit with the team and, you know, being suitable to take a company through its next phase of growth is absolutely part of what they're paying me to do.
Yeah, that is the case, isn't it? Utilizing your expertise, part of what you're being paid to do. And then I get paid to bring that team to its next level of effectiveness, really look at what the construct of that team is, what it is that they are there to do, and then how do they come together, unite, and make that happen. And so that's when we come back to the first part of this podcast. That's the how are we doing it in terms of our behaviors and our styles of working and our collective mindset, with clarity and crystal clarity around what success actually looks like for us. What is it that we're striving for? So when we reach it, we know that we've achieved it and it's measurable. And with us having such sort of ambiguity around us as large organizations, scale up organizations, everyone looking at growth, that measurable factor can become very challenging. And I do see that as being something that can derail teams and sort of take them out of this space of performing to a space of frustration, because yeah, they're starting to see a lot of, they're not seeing the fruits of their labor as such. And I suppose in that case, I often then observe high performers within that team looking elsewhere, you know, starting to horizon gaze for themselves and their own career and thinking, what else is out there for me? Because what's going on here isn't making me feel good. And hence the loop back into an executive search expert to give them guidance on, do I jump ship or are all ships going through a bit of turbulence?
I think the whole measurability piece is something that a lot of organizations face, that, and it's not unusual at all. But I think, what are some of the motivations of leaders? Well, leaders that feel that they can make a contribution and that contribution is real, as opposed to just pedaling hard. At the end of the year, you look back and say, well, what's actually been achieved? Where have I really made a material difference to this business? And that, when I think shoulders drop and people say, I don't want to continue down this particular path. So I think it's down to the organization to have those metrics in place and to have the regular dialogue with people and also the vision of the CEO to actually articulate the progress that is being made from different parts of the business. So I think, yeah, purpose and vision and measurement all contribute to motivation and longevity of hires, in my opinion.
It sounds as though that's a bit of a top tip. If you were in the seat of the CEO sitting there today, maybe on their walk, having listened to our podcast on, you know, high performing teams, what would be the one thing that you would say to a CEO to have courage to do?
Being authentic, being real, being accessible. I think some of the best CEOs are the ones that have an incredibly strong following. Now, that may sound really obvious, but there are some CEOs who are quite removed and, you know, very wrapped up in investor relations, for example, if it's a listed business. And, you know, big companies are complex beasts to run. And when you take yourself away from the accessibility, that sort of sense of relatability, I think that then that's when you start to lose people. And I think CEOs who have that strong following are the ones that are most successful. Now, a lot of the companies I recruit for and hire for are mid-sized businesses. So I'm talking about businesses in the hundreds of millions quite a lot of the time, as opposed to billions. So that sort of accessibility with people is sometimes perhaps a bit easier with smaller companies. But I still think you've got to show up as a CEO, as a people-centric individual. I think that really is powerful. And that's something that every CEO needs to look in the mirror occasionally and make sure that they can answer the question that they do show up in that way.
So Guy, what would be your top tip, or what would you say is a top tip that you would encourage leaders to have when it comes to being responsible for a high-performing team?
Yeah, I think you've got to be brave. I think as a CEO, you sometimes, when there's long working relationships that a CEO has with certain direct reports, there is a strong sense of loyalty to individuals, which is absolutely, you know, should be the case, and it's an admirable quality. But I think you've always got to be asking yourself, are the current group of leaders the ones that are going to get us to that next phase of growth? And I think you've got to be quite honest. You've got to make difficult decisions. The easier decision sometimes is to stick with what you have and to keep going and hope that things change, but quite often they don't. And the more advanced you get in your career, the more hardwired certain behaviors and characteristics are. So I think, especially when you're going through some sort of transformation, that fresh perspective, that new blood coming into the business, particularly if you're going through digital change, becomes absolutely critical, and therefore an external hire becomes imperative. But getting to that point, having the conviction to make the call to shake up your leadership team that's been with you for a good many years is a really tough barrier to break through for a CEO. And that sometimes requires a little bit of third party support and sounding board. I mean, some of the CEOs I work with, they're talking about hires that might be 1 to 2 years away. But they're having the difficult conversations with me to get some perspective and sometimes to get some insights on what other companies in their space are doing. So I think that's probably the thing that I would give as a tip, which is, you know, sometimes you've got to be brave, and you just certainly you've got to be unpopular sometimes. You may, you know, that's why you're paid the big bucks to make the difficult decisions. And sometimes those decisions can be quite emotional as well.
Balancing that, being unpopular for a period of time in order to take the organization to where it needs to go. Therefore, what is my role? What are the demands of me as the C-suite leader, as the leader of this team or the CEO of the business? What's in my scope that isn't in the scope of anyone else's? And a lot of what you're talking about is, if this leader isn't making those decisions, who else makes them? Sometimes they end up being made for you if you're not brave and driving that message. Sometimes I observe that the team around you start to make it for you because they're also sensing that change is required. And then you start to lose their buy-in, right? You lose their respect, you lose their connection with what it is that you as the leader stands for. So I really like the fact that you're blending it also with a bit of planfulness. You know, it's not shooting from the hip and being courageous and brave. It's having that support to discuss it out, have that external lens with a trusted advisor, and then make your decision.
I think also the skill of a CEO is somebody that recognizes their own limitations, and also that sometimes they don't have the objectivity always that they would like. And I think having a really strong CHRO or chief people officer that you allow to be objective and to have challenge convention, I suppose, and have opinion. I think some CEOs, they create a culture where people can be scared to speak up. And that's when, yeah, frankly speaking, you're doing yourself a disservice as a CEO because you're not getting those insights that you really need to make the leadership changes that perhaps might be required. So I think that partnership with the chief people officer and the CEO is a really critical component.
And for me, how you describe this, it talks to that old school phrase of being, it's lonely at the top. And I think what I'm hearing here and also what I observe in the work that I do is that senior leaders need to bring people with them, as you've said already. They need to have voices around them. They need to have their ears open. They need that inclusive perspective, wanting to get the insights from others that are sitting around the table with them. Having that confidant within, you know, a chief people officer and or for me, those members of that leadership team. What would be beautiful and what I have seen, and when I know this team is very high performing, is when the members of that team actually say, we need some change here. And they say that with the best interest of the organization that they are of service to. And so the voice comes from them. And in that situation, that leader of the team had created something very unique in the robustness and also the loyalty, the integrity, the efficacy of what that leadership team stood for. They knew that they were of service to all the people that worked within that organization, not just, you know, their own roles and their own security. Easier said than done, of course. Yeah. But I think that it does talk to that earlier point that you've mentioned in terms of the culture that a leader within an organization is driving and creating. We're receptive to hearing the voices of others.
Completely agree.
Well, I have really enjoyed talking this through. Is there anything else that you think would be important for our listeners to know as they are thinking about high performance within their teams? As we've talked about in our previous podcasts, you know, the performance of our people is what impacts our results. What would be anything else that you think we should share here?
I think it's really about sometimes asking yourself the question of what people change could be pivotal to drive the next phase of growth. And I think, you know, what I often counsel clients around is really scrolling forward 1 to 2 years. I think there's a lot of companies out there that are quite short-term focused and don't really appreciate how long hiring can actually take. I mean, in an executive hiring process, by the time you've worked through a notice period for somebody that's going to join you, it could easily be, you know, 9 to 12 months from end to end process. So, and then by the time the person starts, how long does it then take them to make an impact on that business? So I think, you know, the advice I'd be saying is always be scrolling ahead and appreciate how long these processes can take and how long when you hire someone it takes for them then to make an impact on your business. So always be thinking ahead, have a dialogue with executive search partners about longer term planning.
Thank you for your time, Guy. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me along.
Before we conclude this episode, I have some exciting news to share with you. At Newland Rock, we have developed a team effectiveness health check tool that you can now access by visiting newlandrock.com/team health check. We understand that the success of your leadership team is crucial to achieving your organization's strategic goals, and therefore we want to provide our clients with a tool that can help them identify ways to enhance their team's performance. Once you complete the team health check, you will receive immediate insights and recommendations. These insights will help you understand how your team is performing now and identify ways to help you improve their performance for the future, all aligned to our signature program, where we work with high-performing teams across the globe. I hope you find this tool helpful, and I'm looking forward to sharing your results with you.